Well, this is a way to start us off. I'm Maya.
I'm Amy. We're both Laurier students, obviously.
Yeah, if we weren't, that would be kind of awkward, but
I am second
anyways,
year.
I'm
My
first year and we're both film students.
So get ready for lots, putting all of our extensive knowledge of celebrities and film to use through this.
Yes, but no annoying film bro talk. We'll be a little
Yeah,
bit
don't worry.
pretentious, but we'll be pretentious, but not in the film bro sense.
No. Don't worry. It's a safe space. We
Okay,
also
so
like trash.
so our podcast is called Highly Caffeinated because we are two girls who like coffee.
Yes. And we also
Because
talk like we are on like a caffeine overdrive 90% of the
like we took three caffeine pills.
Yes. I've never tried
Okay.
those. They seem a little scary.
Yeah, neither have I, but coffee's good enough for me.
Exactly.
Wow, we're
Okay.
already getting to a conversation about coffee. Who would have thought? Okay. Let's get it started off. So, every single week or whenever we do this podcast, depending on, we are going to be doing, a daily roundup or weekly roundup of whatever is happening in the Hollywood celebrity world because that's what everyone wants to know to disconnect from their own lives.
Exactly. We like to live vicariously through people who have more money than us.
Exactly. Because we're paying money to not go to school. So
Okay. So, Maya, do you want to kick us off?
yes, I do. Okay, so this is a weekly roundup. No sound effects yet because we are not good with that stuff. Okay, so the first thing that we're going to be talking about is this weird shit that's going down with the whole Kim and Pete thing, but the also Kanye. So,
Who's the girl he's with now? I don't
okay,
remember
so
her
he's with
name.
some girl called Julia Fox. Apparently, she was in Uncut
Julia.
Gems. She was in Uncut Gems with like
Oh.
Adam Sandler, but I didn't watch that movie. Like, my
Me
family watched it, but
neither.
I didn't.
Yeah,
But
I didn't either.
it's from what I've seen from the media, like Kanye and Julia have been together for about 3 weeks and they're already doing the whole matching outfits and matching things. But it's funny because Kanye's saying that he's like, I don't really have that much of an opinion on whether Pete and Kim are a fake couple, but it's funny to me to see Kanye be like, oh, they're fake, and then like
He's
going
dating this
matching
like,
outfits. Yeah.
yeah, with this like woman. I saw it on Daily Mail, obviously on Snapchat, and I was
The
like,
real news comes from.
exactly. And I saw pictures of the two of them together, and I was like, who is this? Like, I was like, what is happening? And then it was like, she's a model, and I was like, I thought she was a model. I didn't know she like did acting. I guess she was in Uncut Gems. I mean, good for her. But I was like, this is so random. And then I was like, oh, obviously he's just like getting back at Kim Kardashian for being with Pete Davidson. And then all of a sudden he's like, Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson are fake. I'm like, Kanye, honey, what
Yeah.
are you doing?
Yeah, Kanye maybe needs to tone it down. I mean, he always needs to tone it down, let's be honest. But the funny thing is that I don't know if it was in a song or just in an interview, but Kanye like said some like I'm gonna like beat up Pete or something and like a s and I'm s was so
It's so extra. Like, dude, you have like children with this lady. Like, stop trying to like cause trouble for no reason.
No, but the really weird part is that he was all like really mad about the whole Kim and Pete because he was like, oh, I haven't, like, she's still my wife. I haven't seen any papers, but then goes on to date a woman. And wasn't he just, like, before this Julia woman, wasn't he just dating Bradley Cooper's ex-wife? I forget her name.
Have
He
no
was like on
idea.
a few dates with her. It was like all over social media, and that just ended with nothing. Like, it's kind of also, it's just kind of rich of Kanye to be like, oh, yeah, this is fake in PR when he's literally in like matching outfits with this woman.
Yeah, that I don't understand him. He's always on some like weird, I don't know. Yeah, and then I saw this thing where it was like a bunch of the outfits that like Julia's wearing are like very similar to ones that Kim's worn and like
Yeah.
matching outfits that her and Kanye would do. And I was like, I don't like this. This is so petty and stupid. Like, be adults. I'm like, this, you guys are like literally in your 40s.
Isn't it just
Stop.
funny to see like Kim seemingly like kind of letting loose more so? 'Cause it like it's like what kind of what her what was her relationship like with Kanye?
It's still like, because when I like first discovered the world of the Kardashians, I like watched the show. Like, I would watch the episodes.
So did I.
And
It was
I
entertaining.
like,
It's like, what are the rich people with no talents doing?
exactly. Like, and I would like, and I saw like her and Kanye get together, and I was like, whatever. Like, he didn't really have that much controversy around him. And then like as they were together longer, and as more of who he was like showing on the show, I was like, this makes no sense. I was like, well, Kim, like, it just seems so weird. Like, he just is a very strange person, and he also seems like he's not very nice of a person to be around.
Yeah, his personality just kind of confuses me. Like, it seems like it's played up in a sense because he's Kanye and he has that persona. And now he's Yee. He's not Kanye anymore. He's Yee.
Oh my god. I don't understand it. Yeah.
Anyways, enough talk about people we don't like. No, I'm kidding. No. But yeah, we do love Pete Davidson, though.
We love Pete Davidson.
We will always love Pete Davidson unless he pulls, like, some kind of John Mulaney type.
Yes.
But we won't talk about that. We'll bring him up later. Okay. So this is kind of taking a detour, but I saw on Instagram the other day that Bridgerton season 2 is coming, like, in a few months. I think in March.
Apparently
this season, I didn't read the Bridgerton books, but I know that they're very steamy. But I heard that Bridgerton season 2 is going to be more of like an enemies to lovers situation. Because, like, if you think about it, like, the Duke and, like, what was her name? Oh,
Daphne.
Daphne. Why did I think it was Brittany? Yeah. That's so weird. Okay. Anyways, like, theirs wasn't really like an enemies to lovers. It was more of like a strangers to friends ish to kind of a little bit of conflict and then lovers.
And then so obviously, her being so shady.
But apparently, the season's going to be like more of an enemies to lovers. And I'm like, trope. Like, fanfic trope, let's go.
The actress who plays, like, I don't remember any of their names. I did watch the show. I can't remember any of their names. To be honest, I don't even remember what the Duke's real name was. I just remember his name being the Duke.
Simon.
So, Simon.
Like Simon says.
No, guys. Okay, so the girl who's playing, like, whatever, like, Anthony, I think it's the brother's name. His, like, love interest or whatever, she was in Sex Education.
Education is such a good show.
Banger show. Like, that show is peak, like, high school TV. Like, that is what I want in a television show that's about high school kids. It's, like, fun, love the colors, the whole show, chef's kiss. And her character is, like, kind of like a side character. She doesn't really do much, but, like, the acting is really funny. And so I'm excited. So, and she's really pretty. And I think there was, like, a little teaser clip that they put out, like, a couple months ago. And I watched it, and she seems like her character has, like, charisma and personality. Like, not to any to shame any of you Daphne lovers out there, but she was kind of annoying.
Listen, I need to watch the show again.
Some kind of sketchy things. She was
I don't think we can talk about the sketchy things she did, because first of all, I don't want to spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen it, but I also. You probably shouldn't talk, but apparently it was like the thing she did was like even less than what she did in the book. So I don't even want to know what she did in the book.
My friend's mom is part of like a romance book club. Like, they read romance books.
Oh my god! Can I be part of that? Wait. Backtrack.
They read, like, you know, like the little paperback books. Little like $5 ones you can find at like Shoppers Drug Mart. It's amazing. Like, those kinds of books. And I was at her house, and her mom was like having her book club while I was there for dinner, and they were talking about it. And I was like, I don't think I could read them just because I think I'd get so angry. But it was so entertaining, like, listening, because, like, they don't read the books as if, like, oh my god, these are the best books ever. They read them because it's, like, entertaining easy. And funny easy and really, really easy to read. And, like, you know, but, yeah, they read all the Bridgerton books, and her mom was like, no.
Is it, like, 9 of them?
Yeah, there's, like, one for each sibling.
Oh, yeah, but I want the Penelope book. Isn't there any Penelope?
No, hers is the worst.
Why is it the worst?
Because the guy that she gets with is, like, the worst person ever.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Like, he turns her into, like, Little Miss, like, good wife kind of a thing. Shit. And which is, like, so against her character. So, it, like, I was so mad. I was, like, I would read her book because, like, her character seems the most interesting. And then my friend's mom was like, no. And then I was at Indigo and I saw the books and I read the synopsis and I was like, because the guy that she gets with is, like, in a previous book for one of the other siblings who, like, she gets, like, forced to, like, get married to him, but then, like, she's like, no, I don't love you, you're kind of an asshole. And then
I almost forgot the reveal that happened at the end of the first season, which I won't say because
I
almost fully forgot that happened because it almost felt like it took a backseat at one
point. Yes, because that it was like majorly advertised as Gossip Girl in Victorian England, but like that was like literally not really that much part of it.
Daphne's really the epitome of I can change him.
Yeah,
he needs literally me. No. Okay,
and then he's not even in it anymore.
Yeah, well, apparently, like, here's the thing. I understand that, like, if you do negotiate a contract and only sign up for one season, I get it. But it's definitely, like, it's either, like, a hit or a miss, because, yes, he was really good in that show, the guy who played Simon. But at the same time, I know that he's going to be in some new, I'm pretty sure he's in that new Russo Brothers movie that's also going to do with Chris Evans. But, like, we don't really know, other than the show he's been in, because I haven't seen any of his other stuff, how good or whatever he is. So, my problem is you know how on shows there's these like main characters that will leave because they want to go on to do quote unquote bigger things, and then that's the biggest thing they ever do. Yeah. He either made a really good decision or a really bad decision. But I did hear that like the Duke actually isn't really in the second book much. But I also just think that the reason why there are like book like there are adaptations of books so like to movies is so you can change shit and people. Sorry, I can't say that word. Stuff. So you can change stuff, right? So
yeah,
I feel like he either made a really good choice to leave after one season so he could like be able to sign contracts for other things, because like also being like tied down to a contract can sometimes like mess things up. Or
Riverdale. They're all locked into like five.
Okay, but I don't even watch Riverdale anymore. But it's so camp now. I feel like it's like they're making the actors are making bank and they're having fun with their stupid characters. So honestly, like
it's so weird. I like the girl actress like Cheryl. Her like Instagram popped up on my explore page, and I like went and looked at it, and there was like photo from like the most recent episode of Riverdale.
I have to
and
say, I was
looking at it and I was like, I don't even like it started as being like a fun show about the Archie comics characters like solving a fun mystery, and now I'm just like,
yeah. But looking back to season one, I guess this, but season one slash maybe kind of season two was sort of classic CW, but then I realized looking back that it was never really that good. It just had an interesting storyline, but then it kind of...
Yeah.
Because, like, also, CW's obsession with, like, having teenagers get with their teachers.
I don't know.
Aria and Ezra. Or just, like, not, like, very inappropriate.
That was ABC Family?
Yeah, but then it didn't end on CW or something?
It was, like...
Or is it Freeform now? Or it's what?
It's Freeform now.
Okay, it's Freeform. Who decided? I have a good name to change this to Freeform. What is that even supposed to mean?
I have no idea. No, but I was because I, everybody in who was listening to this podcast, go watch the YouTube video, the three YouTube videos, each an hour and a half long, by Mike, the YouTube channel.
I was literally watching this before we started filming. I'm not kidding.
Literally, I have been obsessed with this YouTuber for like a year. I love his videos. I started watching it when he did like a, I think it was like a Hunger Games video. Love him. And he did like a 3-part series, just like deep diving into Pretty Little Liars. It's called Unhinged Recap of Pretty Little Liars. And they're amazing. And watching it made me remember how like in the early 2000s, like mid-2010s to like before, like shows were doing everything. They had these 24 episode seasons that they had to fill up all of this
and those were like 45 minute episodes.
My favorite
thing though about those shows too is because they were like always filming, and like it was still technically just a teen show, but it was on these like 45 minutes instead of 25 minutes. They had so many continuity issues, and it made me laugh so hard because they would either start filming in the wrong place and you could see people start walking while they were like paused while they were just like standing in one place, or someone's oh my god, you know in Gossip Girl when there's a scene where Serena's wearing a dress and then they cut
and
to
it
the
cuts
next
and then, she, it
and then she's
back
wearing sweatpants
and
she's wearing sweatpants under her dress. Okay,
yeah,
we're getting so out of hand with this. Okay,
yes, but
so
yeah.
Moving on to the next thing. Okay, so everything on my YouTube recently has been okay. But before we get to that, because I want to talk about that, like, I want to talk how unhinged that entire situation is. But the funniest thing to me right now is, like, the fact that Andrew Garfield is basically on, like, a post, like single No Way Home press tour,
yeah,
admitting to his lies and also taking pride in all of his lies. He's yes. been putting in the work. He deserves a raise for all the lying he was doing. Toby did nothing. I mean, no, good for Toby, but like,
it was
Toby.
Like Andrew was doing like Tick Tick Boom at the same time as the Spider-Man press was like yeah. coming out. So he was like on all these talk shows, like trying to promote this like amazing musical that's literally my favorite thing ever. And all
Tick,
of the
Tick,
interviews
Boom is so
were, like,
good.
You're in Spider-Man, right? You're in Spider-Man, and he was like,
you're no, Spider-Man.
Like, but like you're in it, and he was like, no. And this man,
no,
was,
I'm
like,
not the werewolf.
Yeah, he's like literally lying through his teeth so hard. He deserves an Oscar just for that. Like, no
honestly,
one believed him.
There's some sort of honorary award for all that.
He was like, no one believed him, but not because he was bad at lying. Like, I only didn't believe him because I was like, it just makes sense for them to be in it. But
I actually got reverse spoiled for the movie. So basically,
really?
For the most part, before I saw the movie, I was able to avoid all spoilers. Like the funny thing is when I got from the literally the second I went on TikTok when I got home from the movie, my entire TikTok was spoilers. But before the movie, I was able to like mostly avoid all of them. Like I didn't see any spoilers. Anyway, I got reverse spoiled because someone said in the comment section, Toby and Andrew are not in the movie. And for like a year, I was in denial, being like, I don't want to get my hopes up, so I'm
and
saying
they
that
are
not
in
be
it.
The movie.
Exactly.
And then they were, and I was literally nudging my friend who was sitting next to me during
yeah,
the movie every 3 minutes, being
movie,
like,
"Don't listen to our."
Well, we already spoiled. But just put a like trigger warning before it. No.
Yeah, just like for most shows that we're and movies we're going to talk about, there will be spoilers. So
yeah. Don't listen
just, like,
to this.
Watch everything and then you'll be fine.
Watch everything. But honestly, it was just that was like the highlight of my year, low-key. But
that movie, yeah.
Yeah. But so Andrew was on an interview with this interviewer who does a lot of MTV interviews, Josh Horowitz, who I love.
Yes,
everyone
yes,
should go watch
him.
Josh Horowitz's interview. Shout out.
He's so funny.
Yeah, he's definitely
so
gonna listen to this. But anyways, he was talking, he literally played back the clip to Andrew of Andrew lying a few months before on his podcast about not being in the movie, and they were just reacting to Andrew's lies, and he was like, that's where I went a bit too overboard. This is good. I did a good job there. It's so funny.
Yeah,
that was an acting job in and of itself.
People, the Marvel people, when
it was
they
better
talk,
than, it was better than mainstream.
Yeah. I still haven't watched it. My sister watched it, and she was like, it was a lot. She also thought it was so funny that like they put Jake Paul in it, and but like
that's how
that was
the last like straw of them of whoever made that film like not understanding social commentary. You don't put
yeah.
the person you're trying to like you're not you don't
make
like especially because they definitely
on.
Paid him to be in the movie. Like
yeah,
that's very not that's counter like productive.
Exactly, it's just
it was,
like
I tried really hard to like that movie, but it was so bad.
I know,
props
I
to Andrew
had,
for being invested
actors,
in that role, but it was so bad.
It had good actors in it. It had, like, Maya Hawke. Wasn't Alexa Demi in it?
Yeah, she was. She,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Speaking of Alexa Demi, Euphoria Season 2. Oh,
how old is
the
she?
Game
so you see those TikToks of Alexa Demi being, like, like she was born in, like, 5500 BCE because no one knows her date. She, like, wiped her actual birth date off the internet, so she could be, like, 30, she could be 24, she could be 434.
Wait, you actually can't figure out how old she is?
No, because there's no, she apparently, she, like, wiped her actual, like, or not her, but you can't find her.
Oh,
like,
my God, you literally can't.
Everything you find is different ages.
Oh, my God, I literally just Googled, yeah, it just says she was born in Los Angeles.
Well, speaking of Alexa Demi, can we talk about Euphoria? Are you?
Yes, I haven't watched episode 3.
Okay, I have. Episode 3 has been the funniest so far, I will say.
Okay.
Okay, so my thing with Euphoria is that it's super entertaining. Well, at points. Other points, it's just kind of disturbing. I mean, it's supposed to be disturbing. That's why it's a drama.
Yeah.
But I also think that it's kind of just, I know that we're only 3 episodes in, but, like, I feel like you could tell by 2 episodes into season 2 that it's kind of a mess. Like, they don't know how to tie up loose ends on that show. Like, I won't really spoil anything for, like, episode 3 for you, just, like, the premise of it. But basically, see, like, episode 3 is, like, the Cal episode, like, Nate's dad.
Yeah.
And basically, it, like, I'm not going to say exactly what happens, but it explains sort of why he is, at certain parts of his life, why he is the way he is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't explain at all why he likes to take videos of people he does blank yeah. with. So it's like they have these really weird plot points of people doing really messed up stuff, and then they don't really explain why they do it.
Okay.
And they
okay.
almost try to make you feel bad for them, but then it's also like, but they're like, these are like horrible people.
Yeah, because I've seen that before where a lot of people were like, with Nate, because like I am number one president of the I Hate Nate Jacobs fan club.
Nate Jacobs is horrible.
He is literally the epitome of, like, the worst human being on the planet that is currently alive, so I literally hate him so much.
Cassie, please see reason.
Oh, my God. It is infuriating. And I was watching, like, because they do after each episode, they do, like, how they made the episode, they, like, talk about
it. Oh, yeah,
yeah. And they were, like, I don't remember if it was last season or in one of the, like, two special episodes they did, like the Rue and Jules one, where like they were all like talking about how like people, like teenagers, were starting to like romanticize like Nate and being like, no, but like look at how messed up his life is. And the creator was like, that was not the point of his character.
And but I also like, feel like hey, Sam Levinson is not Gen Z. And the thing about Gen Z yeah. is that, yes, sometimes they say really messed up stuff and have really weird opinions, but a lot of the time when they do that, it's literally a joke, and they put it on the internet yeah. so other people their age will laugh at it, too. People yeah. make thirst traps for, like, Willem Dafoe. Like, we're not serious about anything in this generation.
Exactly. Like, I was, and I think the, like, because I don't think that hit, like, I think, I don't know how to explain this. The character, like, Nate Jacobs, any evil character in a show, if they're played by a hot actor, people are going to romanticize. Like, that's just
yep.
the way people, just, like, anyone of any generation is going to react to film and television, which is why I think that, like, it bothered so many people that people were, like, romanticizing him. And I was like, okay, like, obviously don't yeah. do that. But, like, people are in love with Jacob Elordi, so they're going to do that no matter yeah, exactly. what.
And they'll, like, take a scene without wanting to have, like, the context of that character involved in it. They just want to show them being hot.
Yeah. Also, this season, there has been a little bit unnecessary nudity for me. I think
what do you mean?
It has, like, there have been a lot of Ds that oh,
yeah.
I don't
oh, yeah, yeah, no, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Like, I don't think it's been as necessary as I think it is. And speaking of, I saw this interview today that Sydney
with Sydney Sweeney. I saw
yeah,
the same one.
About
I saw
how,
the
like, same one. There were a couple scenes where, like, Cassie was supposed to be not wearing top.
You could say topless. That's not a bad word.
Yeah. And she, like, told the creator, like, I don't think this is necessary for the scene. And they actually listened to her, which I
yeah, well,
think
is... I think it was Sam Levinson who she told, right? So yeah. my problem with that situation is the fact that
she shouldn't have had to ask.
At the end of the day, that character is, no matter if the character is a minor or not, because I'm not sure if her character is 18 or 17, that character is still a teenager, and it's weird that she even had to say that there was unnecessary topless scenes.
Exactly.
To, like, a grown man who wrote the script. It kind of creeps me out. And, like, also, yeah. I heard that, like, Barbie Ferreira, like didn't even go to the premiere because she had some tensions with him this season because she didn't like where her character was going and
wow.
he didn't listen to her. So, and also, like, there's that whole thing with, like, the fact that Sam Levinson is white and he wrote Malcolm and Marie, which about, like, basically characters, like, from, like, that are
yeah.
definitely not white issues, you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, like,
I don't know, something about him, he seems away.
Like, I know, like, because here's my thing, is, like, I love the show. I think it's a really, really well-written, well-made. Like, I
yeah,
think
and Zendaya definitely deserves that Emmy. She definitely deserved
yeah.
that Emmy.
For I real. Think, like, the cinematographer for that show is, like, a genius. Like, what
oh, yeah,
he's done
oh,
is, like...
Oh, he's insane. And the lighting,
like,
oh, my God.
But I think the stories are, like, the scripts are well-written, but I don't know if the stories are. Like, some, like, the words that they're saying is, like, it's very, like, you can tell it's a smart person that wrote the show, but
yeah.
there are some storylines for the characters that I don't feel are necessary, and there are some things that I feel like the show is doing just because, like, they're trying to keep themselves as being this, like, risky show that, like, goes in all these different dark places where, like, sometimes it's just not necessary.
Yeah, and but I also see that, like, divide online of people being like, well, you know, not everyone had the same high school experience. And I don't know how people in other parts of, like, the world, especially because, like, we're Canadians and these kids are also, like,
yeah,
live in, like, the U.S. and whatever. But, and I understand that there's definitely divide and there's definitely kids who get into some bad stuff and their kids who, like, get pregnant and their kids who do a lot of drugs and have addictions and stuff. But I really do believe that if there's this many people in the exact same, like, area doing this, it maybe should have been in college. And also just because of the amount of topless and nude scenes that
yeah.
the director and the creator seem to want to put in the show, it would feel a lot less icky if we knew that we were looking at adults, I feel. Like, we know yeah. we know inside that the actors are adults.
But it's still kids in the show.
Yeah, exactly. Because these are... And the weird part about seeing these characters also, like, from a new perspective is that, like, when I watched season one, I was still, like, I was in, like, grade 10.
Yeah, I was in
Or, like, grade it was, 12. Like, summer of grade 10. And now it's very weird to think about the fact that we are now older than those characters. And now we're, like, do people who are younger than us really go to that extent? There's, like, a 12-year-old, like, drug seller. Like, whatever that word is.
I feel like... drug dealer, you mean?
Oh, yeah, drug dealer, drug seller. Ashtray, yeah, this 12-year-old.
I feel like, I think Ashtray
does it exist?
Is kind of like a comedic character.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's more there, not in a sense of, like, this is a realistic thing. I think it's more of just, like, a funny thing to make the show a little bit, like, lighter. But
I don't think, does really anything make that show lighter?
I don't know. But here's
my thing. Actually, episode 3 was kind of funny.
Because I know the show is based off of the creator's experience in high school, like, as a drug addict in high school. Like, Rue is a personification.
Well, the funny part about that is, well, not funny, that's the wrong word to use. The interesting thing about that is, I'm sure that he did put a lot of himself into Rue, like, he expressed that, but we don't hear them say often enough that he did not create Euphoria from the ground up. It was an Israeli show first.
It was an Israeli show.
Like,
yeah,
I'm not saying that he didn't create his own version of it, because he definitely did,
like,
but
yeah, it was a show that
he didn't
before.
Yeah,
because I think from what I have, like, when I watched the first season, and I watched the, like, behind the scenes stuff. It was like the show concept already existed. This, like, raunchy high school show. He just was like, oh, I think it would be interesting if I made the main character a version of who I was in high school. I think that would be an interesting lens,
yeah,
to view everything through. I also think, because Rue is the narrator and she's such an unreliable narrator, it
very
adds this element to the show of, like, yes, all this stuff is insane that's happening, but half of it might not even be true, which I think allows them to, like, get away with something that, like, people would normally question by them being like, but she's unreliable.
Yeah, but I also think the problem a bit with that is that we don't know how many seasons this show is going to go. Like, we know that's probably definitely going to get picked up for a third, because, like, if you see the amount, it broke records with how many people watched,
yeah,
the beginning of the second season. But my problem is that when are we going to find out what's really going on, because we know that Rue is an unreliable narrator? Because the thing is that this isn't a movie. Meaning that we don't know how far the show is going to go. And what if it just ends and we never know what was, like, real and what isn't? You know what I mean? Like, like, there's people saying, ooh, what if Rue is, like, dead this entire time? I'm like, that's not true.
That would be
People are going a little far. But then there's people who think they're coming up with an original concept by saying that Rue is unreliable. Like, she didn't say it herself. And I was like,
yeah,
okay.
She was literally, like, her first line was, like, I don't, some of this might be true, some of this might not be, I don't really care.
Okay, we've been going on for so long with this, and I think we need to go to our point
that's gonna stay
for the rest of the episode.
Yes, also, like, Euphoria episodes come out every week, so you will be hearing a lot more from us about Euphoria.
HBO Max sponsor us. Actually, no, Crave, because we're Canadians and
Crave.
we can't get HBO.
Yeah.
Crave, can you lower the cost for us? Make it easier on us. We have we have all these streaming services. Let us pay a little less.
And it's
okay. So basically, our last point, which will go into a whole thing at the end of this episode. Basically, we are going to be talking about the current, not drama, but situation that has gone down between
Taylor Swift
and Damon Albarn.
Who is he?
Well, apparently he's actually kind of well known within the music world, but we just both don't know who he is. But there's some people who
I saw this and I was like, who is this man? And then Taylor Swift was like, I used to be a fan of yours. I was like, because
I was like, who?
Yeah, I was like, I assumed he was a country singer because that's like the genre of music, country and rap, but I didn't think he was a rap music artist, are like the two genres I know the least about. Like, I like country music, but I'm pretty basic when it comes to country music. Like, I don't know any deep cuts.
Yeah, I know like Casey Musgraves and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, like so I was like, I assumed he was a country artist. If Taylor Swift was like, oh, I've been a fan of yours for so long, but
should I explain the situation?
Maybe yes, I think you should
piggyback off there. Okay, so basically. Yeah. Yesterday, or was this yesterday or 2 days ago? I think it was yesterday.
I think it was yesterday.
So basically, a few days ago from when this podcast drops. But basically, what happened is that there's this guy named Damon Albarn. I still don't know how to say it. And he's doing some sort of interview for a magazine. And then he's talking about, I guess, how he's not a big fan of a lot of modern songwriters because he doesn't really think that they're, I guess, authentic anymore. And then the person who's interviewing him, like, brings up Taylor Swift as an example of someone that, like, writes their own music.
Yeah.
And then he says in one line, by the way, he says, Taylor Swift does not write her own songs. And then the journalist or the person interviewing him says, like, of course she does, or at least write some of them. And he's like, but co-writing, being a co-writer and being a writer are two different things. And then he goes on to use Billie Eilish as an example, who co-writes with her brother. And by the way, they're both great, really talented, like, songwriters, her and her brother. But why are you going to use an example of someone that co-writes with someone just because they're, like, their family member? Like, what's... And also, my problem with this whole situation is the fact that an easy search on Google could have told him that his thoughts were wrong, but instead, he chose to put them out there, and then what happened was that Taylor Swift came out with a tweet after, rightfully so. I'll go pull up the tweet right now so I can see exactly what was said by her. Amy, you want to say some things before I go find it?
Yes. While you're going and finding, I think, because my whole thing was, like, he was like, oh, she co-writes songs. I was like, okay, like, there are songs that she co-writes, like, great, like, a lot of artists do. And then right afterwards, he goes, and Billie Eilish is, you know, such an original songwriter, she writes with her brother. But then he just contradicts his own point by saying, co-writing, is it true songwriting? By using an example of someone who co-writes. Like, I think that just, like, I was like, come up with an artist, like, why did you pick an artist?
Exactly. There are so many, and he literally used, and the problem is, the other example he used was, like, Ella Fitzgerald, who he said that she never, like, wrote a song in her life, but she was obviously, like, extremely talented, but she never wrote a song. But then he also said that Taylor just co-writes songs but doesn't write songs, so he used all these convoluted examples which didn't prove
doubling
what he was trying to make. Yes. Okay, so I found the tweet.
Yeah.
So basically, the tweet was a Los Angeles Times interview where he was asked, she said Taylor Swift, she doesn't write her own songs. And then Taylor quoted this tweet. She replied to what he said, saying, "At Damon Albarn, I was such a big fan of yours until I saw this. I write all of my own songs. Your hot take is completely false and so damaging. You don't have to like my songs, but it's really effed up to try and discredit my writing. Wow. P.S. I wrote this tweet all by myself, in case you're wondering." And rightfully so, Taylor got mad, because throughout Taylor's entire career, she's been just also limited to a lot of stuff because people like to put her in a box of, well, you only write songs about your boyfriend. But now, on the other hand, so it's either you only write about ex-boyfriends or you don't write anything at all.
You're fake.
Yeah. Because they love to use these fake things against her, which a quick Google search will prove wrong to you. Because, like, Epiphany.
She wrote an entire album by herself.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, she literally wrote.
And there's so many song examples that are not about. There's so many song examples from Taylor also that are just not about guys at all. And literally just people don't even care to look through her discography or find out, because all they want to say is bad stuff about her. But, like you were just saying, basically what happened in around 2009, 2010, Taylor won Album of the Year for Fearless, which was her first Album of the Year win. Out of the three she's won now, by the way, because she's extremely talented. She's won three times. And basically, she had just won Album of the Year, and there were a lot of articles and things questioning whether or not Taylor wrote the songs that she put on those albums, whether or not she was a that she might have had a co-writer on them or not, or it was just her. There was things questioning whether Taylor wrote any of those songs, because how could a teenage girl be talented, right? How could a woman know how to write songs? It's just out of this world. Who knows how? Because great female songwriters before Taylor Swift didn't exist, apparently, right?
Yeah, like
Joni Carole Mitchell, King, Carole never King. Heard of her. Like, yeah, never heard of her. Like, Norah Jones, but, like, okay.
They Anyways. Are fake.
So after, yeah, they don't exist. So, and then after this, because of all these allegations or things saying that Taylor didn't write her own music, what Taylor decided to do, as basically a 21-year-old girl, she decided to write her third album, Speak Now, entirely by herself. And a quick Google search will tell you that Taylor Swift wrote the entire Speak Now album. She was the only writer on that album.
Exactly. You look on, like, on, I know on Apple Music, I don't know if this is on Spotify, but at the end, if you go to the song lyrics, at the end of the song lyrics, it tells you who wrote the songs. It tells
you. Yeah, on Spotify, you can press song credits, and it'll tell you who wrote it, who's performing, who produced.
Exactly. Like, it's ridiculous to me that people, like, you can not like her music, that's fine. You can not like her songwriting, but no one can say that she doesn't write her own songs. It is her entire, like, career has been, as an artist, has been based off of the fact that her songs are personal, and that is why people relate to them so much, because they're, it feels like it's coming from a real person who's singing them. It's why she's so good.
Exactly. Her, also, because, like, different artists have different strengths, right? So we see someone like Ariana Grande, who definitely does write a lot of, or co-write, like, definitely writes a lot for music. Ariana's songwriting is not the her 100% strong suit, which is fine, because Ariana Grande has an out-of-this-world voice. We know that Taylor Swift doesn't have the extreme best voice in the world, but she definitely has a nice voice, and obviously she deserves to express the lyrics that she wrote about her own life, and that's the thing. Everyone knows that Taylor Swift's strong suit is songwriting, which is why she's been able to stay so successfully interesting in the industry. And also, she's literally written songs for other artists that have won Grammys. Like, I'm pretty sure Better Man, which she wrote for Lady A, or, like, formerly Lady Antebellum. I'm pretty sure she wrote that for them. I think it was for them. And then it won, like, a country music Grammy.
Yeah.
So, for anyone to say that Taylor Swift doesn't write her own songs, just has another thing coming, which the funny part is that after Taylor called Damon out for this, I guess to try and save himself, he replied to Taylor Swift going, and quote, "I totally agree with you. I had a conversation about songwriting, and sadly it was reduced to clickbait. I apologize unreservedly and unconditionally. The last thing I would want to do is discredit your songwriting. I hope you understand, Damon," end quote. So my big problem with this thing is, yes, I understand that, like, clickbait is technically, like, saying in an article, you know, having a clickbaity, like, title saying that this person did this, go check it out. But the problem is that whether or not you gave into that clickbait and clicked on the article because he said this, when you go into the article, he said Taylor Swift does not write her own songs. That's not fake. So how does he, this is literally gaslighting. He's trying to make her think, he's trying to make everyone who read this article and trying to even make Taylor think that they read it wrong, but it's not. Yeah. He literally said that.
Blame the journalist who, like, maybe they shouldn't have clickbaited the article, but, like, they got to get their clicks somehow. Like, that's what news articles do. That's what journalists do. That's their job. But the journalist was just recording down the words that came out of his mouth.
The journalist literally brought up Taylor Swift as a good example of someone who is still authentic in their songwriting.
Exactly. He went out of his way to be like, no. Also, I have an article here from insider.com, reliable source, about nine songs that Taylor Swift wrote for other people that
you might not know them. About.
So, Better Man for Little Big Town, we know.
It was Little Big Town, not Lady Intimate. Yes. Okay.
Oh, yeah. You'll Always Find Your Way Back Home, a banger song from
I love that song. Movie.
I'm so
crazier. Crazier is such a good song. Apple Music. It's on Spotify.
I have no clue because the song she sings in that movie I can't find anywhere on Apple Music. The song really, that Taylor Swift sings. Oh well, Apple Music needs to get on it.
So Best Spotify's Days of Your Life. Shout out Spotify.
If I But here's the thing. I only have Apple Music because I don't pay for it. My dad pays for my Apple Music. So I'm like, if I feel like I can't argue. Because if I was paying for it myself, I'd pick Spotify. But because I'm not paying for it, I'm like, I can't argue.
See, the way I got my like dad to let me get Spotify, like to keep it because we had gotten that free trial thing, is basically because he would sometimes listen and then it would be really annoying because he would start playing a song on my account. And I was like,
and then you can't listen.
Family plan. And we got a family plan and now everyone has it.
Yeah, we are thinking of maybe switching because now they're making it so that like some Apple podcasts are like only, you can only listen to them on Spotify and not Apple podcasts. So
is Emma Chamberlain's podcast on Apple Music?
I have no
idea. Spotify?
I don't listen.
I listen to it.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it.
Demois came out with a new podcast and I was listening to that because I like their posts. Their, even if it's real or not, it's really, Demois like super fun to see that like weekly roundup of like celebrity spottings or like blind items of things that may or may not have happened because it's just really
blind
interesting.
Items are really fun. Okay, moving on to the next song, Babe for Sugarland.
Oh yeah,
she performed it also, with
them. Yeah, Taylor also has her own version of it on Red Taylor's version. Go listen to that. It's so good.
Very, very good. This is what you came for, Calvin Harris. We knew this.
Wait, didn't he keep her backing vocals on that song?
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah, so did John Mayer. Look, we have a complicated relationship. I hate him as a human being, but his music is too good that I just can't stop listening to it. It's a complicated relationship.
I don't listen to his music, but I found out the other day that this is going to sound really embarrassing for people that know this. I'm going to be like, Maya, what is wrong with you? I literally just found out that him singing Free Falling was not his song.
I know. It's a comedy song. Too.
And I guess because my dad started singing and I was like, that's John Mayer. And my dad was like, no. And I was like, oh. It's like, sorry.
Yeah. We also have the song Both of Us, which she featured on. And then we also have
the B&B song.
Yes. Then we also have my favorite song from a movie, Safe and Sound from the Hunger Games.
Oh my god, Safe and Sound?
So hard.
Okay. Can you explain to me? Okay, so that song it was nominated for a Golden Globe, but it lost, I think it lost to Skyfall, which honestly, like, Skyfall deserved everything ever, so it's fine.
Yes.
But it won a Grammy for Best Visual Media. But I find it funny because Taylor Swift has written a few songs for movies. She wrote, like, Beautiful Ghosts for Cats.
Yeah.
But, like, Cats was obviously a travesty, and we all know that. She wrote some song called Sweeter Than Fiction for some movie that was also nominated for a Golden Globe. And she also wrote Safe and Sound, which
and
also...
And she has I Don't Want to Live Forever from
Oh, yeah. Things. But which also, I don't... Like, why did... So, speaking of that, remember the song Earned It by The Weeknd?
Yeah.
So, that was also from 50 Shades of Grey. But that one got nominated for an Oscar. But Taylor has never gotten one of her movie songs nominated for an Oscar. And you would think out of, like, the 16
not
years
lies,
she's had a career.
Like, that is rude. They shouldn't have
like,
done that.
I definitely think Safe and Sound is a good enough song to have been nominated for an Oscar. Or I Don't Want to Live Forever. Like, that song is just as good as Earned It, in my opinion.
No, 100%. And then we also have the Cats song, obviously. The Cats song. And, yeah, that is it. But I thought I would bring that up just so that I can... Because I know we always have those Taylor Swift haters who are like, you're lying, whatever, you're just like... Those people who ignore all the bad things about an artist and just listen to the good things, but...
Well, actually, speaking of songs Taylor wrote herself, this is literally just within two or three albums. There's Begin Again, written by Taylor Swift, only her. State of Grace, written by Taylor Swift. Girl at Home, written by Taylor Swift. Better Man, written by Taylor Swift. The entire Speak Now album, Nothing New, Taylor Swift. I Almost Do, Taylor Swift. 15, Taylor Swift. Red, Taylor Swift. So that's literally just maybe, that's literally basically around 20-something songs out of hundreds of songs that she's written that was just by her, and someone was trying to claim that she doesn't write her own songs. When again, the embarrassing thing about that situation for me from him is the fact that he did it with no proof. He just said she doesn't, but there's proof that she does. Like, that's just not true. It's not the claim people try to make. Like, when people call someone, like, when people say that Taylor dated too much. It's not true because she was a young woman. She's allowed to date as much as she wants.
Exactly.
And she dated in the public eye because that's what she did. Whatever. But it's like, that's an opinion. You know what I mean? I don't think she dated too much, but someone who's really annoying will be like, Taylor Swift dated too much. But like, that's, there's still, like, someone could use that as proof, but there's proof that Taylor wrote many, many songs on her own because it's just true. Like, that has, there's no proof to the fact that Taylor Swift didn't write anything, but she wrote all of it.
It's like, it makes me so angry because it's like, if you're going to take away, as like everyone that I know who is like, Taylor Swift's music isn't for me, the one thing they always credit her for is like, but she's still a brilliant songwriter. She still is like an authentic artist. That is like, if you know anything about Taylor Swift, it's always, she is a songwriter. She is a singer-songwriter. That is what her brand has been built on. And it makes me so mad that this random man who literally, I don't know a single person who knows who he is.
Like, everyone has always said, I don't really care about Taylor Swift, but I'll give it to her that she's a great songwriter.
Yeah, exactly. Which I'm like, look, everyone should love Taylor Swift, but I'm not going to force you to. I mean, my roommates would say otherwise, but that's the price they have to pay for living with me.
Also, really quick, just to go back to the Taylor Swift dating thing, I think Taylor Swift dated a normal amount, and don't for a second think that I think she was like a, like, dated too much, because I love Taylor with everything I have.
Exactly. She dated just as much as what probably a lot of people her age were dating at the time, but because she was someone who was in the public, anytime she talked to a male person, they were like, they're dating, guys, they're dating. And then if as soon as they saw them not together, it was like, oh my god, they broke up. It's like, you have no confirmation of any of this information. You're just making it up. And it's like, just because she chooses not to like confirm or deny any of these claims doesn't mean that they're either true or false. Like,
yeah, and the annoying part is that, like, the reason why Taylor Swift dated the particular people she did is probably also because, you know, she obviously went to this high profile stuff being like an A-list celebrity, so she would like meet people all the time and probably have good chemistry with them. And also, my problem also is the fact that, like, you know, people think that she just dated famous people to, like, get more famous.
But she's like, already famous.
Yeah, but the problem is that, like, sometimes, here's the thing, sometimes PR relationships definitely exist. But the thing is that sometimes famous people will date famous people because they understand the lifestyle. Like, imagine trying to date a normal person that's being like, hey, there's gonna be, like, paparazzi that will follow you. And people will, like, follow you. Yeah. Supermarkets will take pictures of you in random places and want to know where you are and want to know what you're doing. So, obviously, it's easier to be with a person who also understands the lifestyle. Because, here's the thing, sometimes it doesn't work out, but those differences could be amicable when they break up, because they'll be like, well, you're traveling here and I'm traveling there. It's like, it makes more sense because people who aren't famous do not understand the lifestyle, and that's just how it is.
It's just, it like makes me so, like, it just makes people seem so ignorant when they just assume all of these things just based off of, like, they saw a headline. It's like, if you actually think about, like what you said, how hard it would be for someone like Taylor Swift or someone like Harry Styles or any of the other people that she's dated to have to try and find people that they have good chemistry with that also won't get, like, because I know if I was dating someone who was super famous, it would be really, really annoying not being able to, like, go to the mall without having a mob of people attacking me, asking me personal questions. So it would probably just be easier and less complicated to just only look for people who exist in the same world as you. Because then it cuts out that whole, I'm so sorry that these people are stalking you, because they're dealing with the same thing. So it's just, makes it angry.
It makes me angry too. Also, just because Taylor Swift has had to put up with so much annoying stuff from people who just want to bring her down, and then the media used to bring her down too.
They literally forced her to move, because they were literally showing up at her house every day, and like, everyone go watch Miss Americana, the documentary.
Go watch it right now.
You will be heartbroken. Yes, I know, like, I don't feel bad for her because, like, oh, she's rich, blah, 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 yes. But also, like, it's not that easy having everybody watch your every move and literally stalking you and telling you all of these things about yourself and your looks that you can't control. I'm like, I feel really bad that she had to endure all of this while she was just trying to, like, write some songs for fun.
And also, like, I have particular feelings about, like, the fame level that comes with being a singer-songwriter and performer, because on one hand, like, nowadays especially, you know what you're getting into when you want to go into an industry where there's a lot of publicity and where you know that, like, let's say someone wants to be an actor, like, they're obviously, if they know if they get successful, they're gonna have to be a celebrity too, because that just comes with that. But
yeah,
there's the, on the other hand, it's like everyone has different passions for careers, and there's the one thing where you're like, well, if someone has this huge passion to like spend the rest of their life being writing songs and being a singer, they're just gonna have to put up with that. So on one end, I feel bad for them because they have no choice in the matter, because success usually does come with the celebrity status. But on the mm-hmm. other hand, you're like, well, you know what you were getting into, and trying to like act like you're not what you are is also kind of annoying, because
yeah,
you're still like, you still have a much easier life than other people who genuinely have nothing. Too. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's one of those things where it's like, you are someone who, yes, like, not just for Taylor Swift, but like for every famous person.
Any famous person.
It's like, you, yes, there are things that are hard, like, that come with fame, but at the same time, you have the resources to be able to protect yourself, to be able to get yourself help, especially in the US, when like, it's so hard to get mental health help and things like that, because they have no healthcare. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things, when you're someone who is of that status, those kinds of things are very, very easy for you to access. You have access to being able to hire security guards and things like that, that like regular people don't have. So it's like, yes, I feel bad. Like, it sucks that like you feel like you don't have any privacy, but at the same time, you are able to afford a lifestyle where you can seclude yourself from the world if you need
to. Like, the thing is that obviously I felt horrible that Taylor felt like she had to disappear for a long
time.
Because of how the media was bullying her, about how like even people she thought that she was close with turned on her.
Yeah.
Like, just as like a normal human being, like imagine thinking someone was on your side and then all of a sudden they're like, nope, and they leave you. And you thought they were your best friend, basically your family. Like, that's horrible. But on the other hand, it's like Taylor Swift was able to seclude herself, to disappear for a year. And that's, most people can't do that, because they have to go to their jobs, they have to do whatever. But she's able to still do her job from a place where she was. Like, she recorded a Reputation and we didn't even know.
Exactly. Like, people, when, you know, everyday people are going through issues with their friends and their family, and you know, they feel really isolated, they still have to pay rent, go to work. They can't take a year off basically and just like recluse, which I'm glad that Taylor was able to do that, and I'm glad that it helped.
Obviously she was still working, and she recorded Reputation, and she started getting more involved in politics and all that stuff. But you know, most normal people would not be able to disappear from from people for a year to be able to find themselves, or to be able to, you know, get away from everything that was making them feel bad.
Exactly. And I feel like it's always
absolutely no hate to Taylor, because I absolutely love her. We're just like explaining the divide between being able to do this with the celebrity status and no celebrity status.
Yeah, no, I think it's also important. I literally forgot what I was going to say. Never mind. Oh.
Train of thought gone.
No. Yeah, my train of thought is completely gone. It'll come back to me eventually. But yeah. Oh, this is a good conversation. We're almost at an hour.
Okay. Maybe like a few more minutes and then we'll stop.
And then we'll stop. Yeah. Wow.
So you don't have to hear our devices anywhere. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been screaming into the mic.
I have been able to hear the cord a little bit, so we'll try and fix things for next time. I'm also not using a mic for this episode because my mic has not arrived. So because
we're only downloading the the audio, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So like, I guess we can talk about like one last thing with Taylor. What has been? There's so many things going on with Taylor. Well, the fact that she is able to have the what?
When's the next re-recording?
It's going to come soon, I believe. Like, next few months. But I also find it very impressive that through her entire career, when she's been able to keep up all these Easter eggs, but make them, like, insane. It's not just putting a song, putting a word from a song or putting a song title somewhere. She goes all the way and has these little clues that only, like, the
visual.
Her fans are literally, like, the FBI.
Yeah. No, literally. It's scary.
It's, yeah, honestly.
But
and the fact that she'll put in our music video, she'll even say them during an interview.
Yeah. She'll have it, like, pre-planned out and say it during an interview, knowing that we're all going to watch it and someone is going to be on TikTok. And she'll, like, be posting things on TikTok and, like, on Instagram and Twitter and stuff, just, like, out of the blue. And they'll be seemingly, like, mundane. But then you, and then, but then like 2 months later when she drops something, you go back and you're like, this girl has been planting this seed for months.
Yeah, like when the entire fandom was fixated on the fact that we thought that 1989 was coming out and she was leaving Easter eggs for that, that we missed all of the Easter eggs that Rhonda was gonna come out. All because we were so fixated.
Like, sitting in her like PR person's office being like, I don't understand how I can communicate to these people through social media. They are so stupid.
We were like, she's wearing 1989 colors. So is Woodvale? Okay, is Woodvale, is Woodvale the truth, or is it a lie?
No, I think it's a lie. I think it was what she said it was, which was, like, it was the original name for Folklore before she, like, when she was planning it, so she didn't, like, so that people couldn't figure out what it was
to, like, accidentally do. You accidentally, like, leave the name of something else on an album cover.
I feel like it could have been maybe what she was going to call it.
I just, like, didn't believe it. Everyone kept on saying, Woodvale's coming. I was like, that's a lie. She did. She just brought out two albums.
Yeah, I feel like maybe... because I feel like that, I don't think it's a trilogy. I don't think there's going to be a Folklore Evermore, like, a third one. I think those were, like, a duo, and then I think she'll come up with her next album, which will be completely separate. But I think those two, like, we've passed that era. It's been, like, what, almost, like, a full, like, 2 years or full year since, it's been a full year since, a year and a bit since Evermore. It's, like, you know.
So also, I like here's the thing. I love Evermore, and I find the jokes hilarious when people say, like, oh, Taylor doesn't care about Evermore. But, like, it's also, it's her work of art, and I feel bad that people keep on saying that, like, she doesn't care about it, because she obviously does. She wrote it. And she literally has a song in there about, like, her grandmother that passed away, and she has, like, she has Willow, which is literally, like, that's my man. Like, that's literally a love letter to Joe, and you think that she doesn't care about the album?
I know.
I think she cares about it. She just has a lot on her plate right now. She's got a lot to do right now.
I'm mad that the Grammy snubbed her for Evermore. It deserved more from the Grammy.
Yeah, she just got that. She did get an album of the year nomination, right? But honestly,
Jack Antonoff got producer.
Yeah, but the fact that she was even able to get another nomination the second year in a row is pretty. Yeah.
And I think it's a very big thing that she chose not to resubmit the re-recordings for Grammys and stuff, because she could have.
Yeah, especially for Red. Actually, no, that wouldn't have been eligible this year anyways, but, like, Red is the reason, like, basically not winning Album of the Year for Red is the reason why she wrote 1989. I feel like everything happens for a reason anyways, but I do wonder if any of the Vault songs will be submitted, because they're technically new, and they're technically not replacing anything. Yeah, exactly. Nothing new with Phoebe Bridgers. That's one of the best collabs I've heard in years.
Yeah. And I think it's one of her best collaboration songs. I think it was, like, good of her not to resubmit it, just because I know that, like, the Taylor Swift haters would, like, be all up in arms, like, she's trying to get more awards.
I also think she wants to give other people opportunities to, like, get their nominations.
She's already, like, I feel like she was snubbed for Album of the Year for Red, but she's, like, I think she's, like, I've already, like, those songs have already had their shining moment, but the Vault tracks
and still got a Grammy nod.
Exactly. Like, the Vault tracks, I think, are deserving of being a part. Like, I don't think it's, like, her being, like, selfish or wanting to take any more. Like, I think those make sense.
Because there's a song she obviously loved that she wanted to see. Yeah. I'm happy they got to see the light of day, because with everything that went down, at least we ended up getting to see songs that we absolutely love.
And,
like, so
honestly,
much.
I would be fine with All Too Well 10 minute version for Song of the Year.
That song deserves everything. Okay. We have, like, we should probably, like, end it right about now, but let's just say, like,
it's my favorite song. I can't believe my favorite song is 10 minutes long, but I want every song to be 10 minutes long now. Yes.
Okay, so what we have learned is that we love Taylor Swift, and that's the end of the story, basically. There's a lot of weird things going on in the world, but, you know, we'll be able to discuss that next week and the week after that and the week after that. And I hope you enjoyed... We hope that you enjoyed our, basically, our rant. We are Maya and Amy, and we are highly caffeinated. Go drink some coffee and have a nice rest of your day.
Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Bye, guys.